This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Ludwig van Beethoven left his hometown of Bonn in November of 1792 and headed for Vienna with a pile of manuscripts, a powerful technique, and an ambition to study with Mozart, who is acknowledged as the world's greatest composer. He had met Mozart several times before in Bonn, and according to legend, Mozart had even told listeners at one of Beethoven's concerts in Prague to mark that young man. He will make himself a name in the world. But by the time Beethoven arrived in Vienna, Mozart had died, and Beethoven had to settle for lessons with the world's second greatest composer, Franz Joseph Haydn. The lessons did not go well. Beethoven and Haydn did not get along personally. Haydn was fastidious, cultured, and heavily invested in the established order. He had, after all, been a court composer for most of his career. Beethoven, on the other hand, was a somewhat coarse young man from the provinces with leftist political leanings, a rough sense of humor, and a loose idea of what constituted personal hygiene. Even though Beethoven learned a great deal from studying Haydn's scores, he actually learned more in formal study from his other teachers, who included the famous Antonio Salieri. Still, Beethoven knew that the Viennese musical public was knowing, opinionated, and demanding, so he was cautious about presenting his compositions in public at first. And despite their differences, Beethoven respected Haydn's judgment enough that he waited until Haydn had traveled to England to publish his first pieces. By that time, though, he had already made an impression in Vienna with his performances at the keyboard. His playing was praised for tremendous character, unheard of bravura and facility, great velocity of finger, united with extreme delicacy of touch and intense feeling. End quote. Beethoven played everything from the preludes and fugues of Johann Sebastian Bach, which were known mostly by connoisseurs, to more popular works like Mozart's Concerto No. 24, and he raised goosebumps with his fantastic improvisations. By 1801, his compositions were in demand by publishers and the public, and he knew that brilliant concertos were a road to success. His concerto in C was actually the third one he had written, but he chose it to be published first because it was by far the strongest. It certainly makes a good first impression. It's written in the festive trumpets and drums style of Mozart's C major concertos, and its first movement has some of the march-like character of those works. Beethoven is known for his attention to detail, but he also knew how to plan on a broad scale. The initial exposition for the orchestra covers a huge amount of territory. He introduces the opening theme in a kind of conspiratorial pianissimo, and then brings it back in lights on fortissimo. He then brings in a contrasting lyric theme. Actually, we only hear the first half of the theme. This is typical for the bigness of Beethoven's design. He doesn't complete it until about 100 measures later, when the piano finally enters. This beginning leads us on an extensive tour. The before finally returning to C major with his last theme, for now anyway. The critic Donald Tovey described this march as being in Beethoven's best British Grenadiers style. One thing Mozart's music taught Beethoven was the effectiveness of having the soloist enter with an entirely new idea. But unlike Mozart, Beethoven never returns to the pianist's first tune. Much of the development section is pianissimo, which builds the tension and the anticipation. With an original and striking combination of pathos and wit. Beethoven brings us back to the first theme by way of a big right-hand scale in octaves, which leads to a triumphant return to C major. This is one of Beethoven's nods to the big bravura style of concerto which he introduced and which became all the rage over the next three decades. Beethoven's pupil, Carl Czerny, pointed out that even though the second movement is marked largo, very slow and broad, the composer's notations indicate that it should be taken as a tranquil andante, not too slowly. A slow movement with an expressive tone like this one was a new idea in 1795, but it looks forward to the adagio of the Pathetique Sonata a few years later. It's delicately scored, and the orchestra's solo clarinet is an important secondary hero. Whether carrying the melody or in a supporting role. The finale is full of the sort of rough good humor that was one of Beethoven's own personal characteristics. Thank you. always teetering on the edge of acceptable manners. After all the high-energy keyboard gymnastics, the ending comes as a surprise, with the soloist seeming to want to sidle off the stage unnoticed. Czerny wrote that Beethoven had showed him his own way of rearranging the main theme so as to make it sound even more brilliant, but unfortunately he didn't explain how, and the secret died with him. Beethoven's first piano concerto would have been the longest composition of its kind his audience had ever encountered, but they were waiting to hear what this astonishingly talented young man would produce next, and he did not disappoint them. With its grand scale, splendid orchestral style, and impressive and difficult piano writing, Beethoven gave the people what they wanted, but he also set the stage for his even more astonishing accomplishments to come. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.